Morning at today's Daf and Shabbos Kuf Mem Beis. We are starting today with the Mishnah, the beginning of the Perek. We are starting this morning the 21st Perek from Sefer Shabbos. Obviously, we are really winding down in terms of the end of the Masechta. Another four more Prakim to go. We have Prakims 21 through 24, 21 included. So we are really at the tail end. We are going to be discussing various topics here at the end of the Masechta. Try to find transitions and themes that that bring us from one parak to the next parak. Previous parak we talked about food preparation. Over here we're really going to go back to the topic of muksa. It's an extraordinarily short parak, you could see. It's the parak totals to a blot and a half. But either way, we're going to go to the topic of muksa. Back to the topic of muksa. We discussed muksa primarily in the 17th parak of the Masechta. And here we are now basically coming back to the topic of muksa. And let's start with the Mishnah. No to Adam is Benova, Evan B'Yadam. So the Mishnah starts off by saying that a person can take his son, and the son's carrying a stone. And so what you're doing now is you're carrying the muksa, but of course indirectly. You're not directly carrying the stone, you're only carrying your son, who in turn is carrying the stone. And this is now going to be a question of muksa, but the Mishnah seems to actually be very clear about it, and that is that you're allowed to do so. We know it's a question of muksa because Rashi right away writes, you can take a look at the first Rashi in the Mishnah, Ve'evim b'yado b'chatzir. So Rashi says we're talking about the courtyard, meaning this is not going to be a carrying issue. Now, in a moment, when we get to the Gemara, we're going to be comparing this to a issue of carrying of Hotza'ah, but I'm just trying to keep everything nice and organized. At least in the Mishnah, we're talking specifically here about Muksa. And Rashi writes, V'lo amrina d'metaltel le'evin. And what the Mishnah is saying is that you're not carrying the stone, meaning your son is carrying the stone, you're carrying your son, and as a result of that, that's indirect, and the Mishnah's position seems to be that because it's indirect, therefore it's fine. We could put this under the category of tiltum and atzad. We just discussed this in the previous stuff. But in the meantime, however, that's the simple presentation of the Mishnah. Obviously, I'm setting ourselves up because when we get to the Gemara, we're going to be changing our understanding just slightly. The kalkala v'ha'emem besocha. Similarly says the Mishnah, you have a basket of fruit and there's a stone in the basket. And that too, I'm presenting simple pshat in the Mishnah. You're carrying the stone, but you're only doing so indirectly, and so therefore it would be fine. Umitaltan truma tamea im tahora v'im achula. Additionally, person wants to carry truma tamea, so truma tamea itself on Shabbos, it's something which has no purpose. You're not eating the truma tamea. The best thing you can do with truma tamea is burn the truma tamea, but of course on Shabbos, that is simply not an option. So truma tamea also falls into the category of muksa. But if I'm carrying it together with Truma Tahora, or I'm carrying it together with Chulin, so therefore it would be Mutter. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af Ma'alan, Samaduma, Ve'echad Meyam. And Rabbi Yehuda is of the position that if you have, let's say, a mixture of Truma and Chulin, to the point where it is now 100 parts Chulin to 1 part Truma, we know the halach is that in order for Truma to become Batal, so you need a significant more amount of something else in order to create bittul. Under normal circumstances, bittul is only a simple robe. You need a simple majority in order to affect bittul. The shishim, which is often thought of, that's an issue of tam, that's an issue of taste. But in terms of just standard bittul, you need just simply robe, you need a majority. However, when it comes to truma, truma needs a significant amount more. How much more? 100 to 1. 100 parts chulin to 1 part truma in order to affect bittul. Bittul now has occurred. On the other hand, even after bittul has occurred, still there is a requirement to take a portion and give it over to the kohen, because even though there is bittul, and even though for the non-kohen there is a perfect allowance to go ahead and eat such a mixture, nevertheless there still is a part of truma that's in that mixture. Yes, mivutal, yes, it's been negated, but nevertheless there is a part. You don't want to be gozos hashevet, you don't want to take away from the kohen. So what is required now is to take off the portion of truma that was there. So again, in a simple mixture of 100 parts chulin to 1 part truma, so even though bittul has occurred, you still have to take 1 part of it and give it over to the kohen. This is the halacha of ma'alin. And the Mishnah says, af ma'alin es hameduma be'echad omeya. And one is allowed to do that on Shabbos. Now, one could have made a very simple argument in terms of why you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos, and that's because it is going to be an issue of tikkun, meaning that I'm not allowed to eat it until I take off that one portion, give it to the kohen. And so therefore, by taking it off that one portion, so one is going to now be misaking, one has now corrected, one has fixed it. On Shabbos, that is going to be prohibited. One could have easily made such an argument. And what the Mishnah is telling us is that we are not going to make such an argument. And the obvious question is, why aren't we making such an argument? Why isn't it tikkun? So the Gemara is going to ask exactly that question, and that's going to be coming up a little bit later on this morning. Good, so we have now the Mishnah at hand, and so what the Mishnah is telling us is that if I'm holding not the muksa, but I'm holding an item that's non-muksa, and then that item is connected to a muksa item, so the Mishnah says all is good, and you're allowed to carry it. The Mishnah gave the example of holding your son, where your son is holding a stone, and the Mishnah gave the example of holding a basket of fruit, and in that basket of fruit there's also a rock. Okay, and that's a simple understanding of the Mishnah, and let's get to the Gemara, because we're not going to walk away without understanding. I'm a Rava, so we start off with the following halacha said over by Rava. One, Hotzitino Chai, the kiz talui b'tzavaro. You're holding your son, your son's alive. We'll see why in a moment it's phrased that way, but you're holding your son is alive, and he's got a wallet around his neck, chayev mishum kiss. So one is going to be subject to the malacha of otza'ah for carrying the kiss, meaning that you are carrying your son, and your son is holding a wallet, you are now carrying the wallet, and you now are going to be chayev. And yes, this seems to be going against the Mishnah, we're going to come back to that in just a moment, but in the meantime, let's understand over here that we're not talking about muksa, although the wallet, of course, is muksa, but we're really not talking about the malacha of otza'ah. And even though the carrying is done in an indirect fashion, Rava says, you're going to be chayiv. And Tinok Meis, v'kiz talud lo b'tzavero, now Rachmanus, the child is dead. We're just contrasting this for the purposes of halacha. If the child is dead and there's a wallet around his neck, so then you're going to be exempt. Exempt for carrying the dead child, exempt for carrying the wallet. In a moment, we're going to explain everything. So we're going to go step by step. We're going to first explain the first statement of Rava, and that is Tino Chai, the kiss, talo l'bitzava, or Chai Mishum, kiss. So if you are carrying the baby, which is alive, and there's a wallet, so you're going to be Chai because of carrying the kiss. V'l'chai v'nami mishum tinek, now you're also carrying the boy. So Rava k'rebi nosin, sfir le'damar chai nosei satsmo. So the Gemara says, okay, but this is something that we've already discussed at length earlier in the Masechta, on Daf Tzadi Dalin, and that is the idea that when you're carrying something which is live weight, so this is the principle of Chai Nosei Satsmo, and so therefore one is going to be putter, one is not going to be violating Shabbos in doing so. Still, Aser Midrabanan, but not in Isser Daraisa, the principle of Chai Nosei Satsmo, we discussed it extensively back on Daf Tzadi Dalet, what are the various reasons why you're not going to be Chayev, we discussed that as well. Tosos gave, if I remember correctly, three different suggestions in terms of why it is. Anyway, the point being that Chai Nosei Satsmo is going to be putter, not Chayev. And that's why you're not going to be chayav for carrying the child. Interesting, the Gemara over here says we're following the position Rabbi Nassan. If you go back to the Gemara daf on Daf Tzadi Dalet, so we're going to remember that when speaking about carrying a person, even the Chachamim subscribe to the principle of Chai Nosei Satsmo. Our Gemara over here says it's only Rabbi Nassan. That's a little bit misleading, or seemingly. Anyway, point is, you're not going to be chayav for carrying the child. So, v'libato kis legabe tinok. So the Gemara says, okay, but now, why don't we say the following? So the as far as now, the carrying of the wallet, so you're going to be chayav for carrying the wallet. This was Rava's halacha, because obviously the wallet is an inanimate object, and therefore you just carry the wallet, even though, again, it's indirect. And the Gemara says, well, why don't we just simply look at the wallet as something which is ancillary to the child? And so why don't we say that principally you're carrying the child, and the wallet is just simply an ancillary piece of the child, and you should be putter for carrying the wallet. Milo Tanan, this idea, we've seen this idea before. And again, we've gone over this earlier in the Masechta as well. Esachai b'mita putter af alamita. Shehamita tfila lo. You're carrying somebody, and you're carrying on a bed, or on a stretcher, so you're going to be putter for carrying the stretcher, because the stretcher now becomes ancillary to the person. And you're going to be, really, principally, you're carrying the person, and the stretcher is just a means of carrying the person, and so therefore you're not going to be chayav for carrying the stretcher. Why don't we say the same thing by the wallet? Probably everyone already is formulating a distinction in their head, and the Gemara is now going to present the distinction. Mita legabe chay mevat lele. Kis legabe tinok lo mevat lele. The distinction is that when we're talking about a stretcher, the stretcher is there to service the person. Meaning the whole reason why we are using a stretcher is to facilitate the carrying of the person. So yes, the stretcher now becomes ancillary to the person. So when I'm carrying the person with a stretcher, so we could view the stretcher as just simply an extension of the person. And if you're putter on carrying the person, you're putter on carrying the stretcher as well. But over here, Tino, but as far as the wallet is concerned, there is nothing that the wallet is doing in serving as carrying of the child. The wallet is not now an ancillary portion to the child. And so therefore, the way we're going to view it is that you're carrying two items. You're carrying the child, you're carrying the wallet. On the child, you're going to be patur for the technicality of chayno seis atzmo, but there is no technicality for the wallet, and therefore one is going to be subject to the malacha of otzah for carrying the wallet that is being held around the neck of the child. Now, tinok meis v'kis talo b'tzavar patur. Now we're going over Rav's second halacha, which is that if you're carrying a dead child and there's a wallet tied around his neck, you're going to be patur v'lechayv mishum tinok. Now here, rachmanus, the child is dead. So there's no principle of chai no seis atzmo. Why are you not chai for carrying the child? So Rabba Rabbi Shimon Sfir Le Damer Kol Malacha Shein Tzrich Lugufa Pater Aleha. Rabba subscribes to Shitas Rabbi Shimon. This is a classic example of a Malacha Shein Tzrich Lugufa. You are carrying the dead body, but not to get it from point A to point B, just simply to remove it from this location. This is Malacha Shein Tzrich Lugufa. And as a result of that, one is going to be putter according to the Shita Rabbi Shimon. Rav subscribes to the Shita Rabbi Shimon, and that's why you're going to be putter for carrying the child. What about the wallet? It's interesting, the Gemara does not explain the wallet. But in this case, you're going to be putter over the wallet. Rashi explains the wallet. Rashi could find me a little bit below us on the wide lines. Deeper amask malacha shein tzrich l'gufa. Umotzi mesa kover malacha shein tzrich l'gufa yikadam rabba matzniya. So Rashi just tells us where to go back in order to learn the halacha malacha shein tzrich l'gufa. That's back on daf sadi dalet. V'kis shaya talu b'tzavero l'sachek bo agav mare mevatale l'gabitinok shemes v'lo chashiv le'hayishaita. So Rashi says, as far as the wallet is concerned, so because of the merirus, because of the bitter nature of the scenario, you're simply not even thinking about the wallet whatsoever. There is no kavanah whatsoever in order to carry the wallet. You're just in that kind of frame of mind. And so as a result of that, you are not going to be chai for carrying the wallet. That's Rashi's understanding of why you're going to be pater from the wallet, from the carrying of the wallet itself. Tosfos discusses this even a little bit more. Second Tosfos of our parak. But anyway, so you're going to be pater for carrying the dead baby because of malacha shein tzrich l'gufa. And you're going to be pater from carrying the wallet as well because of the merirus Halev, you simply have no attention whatsoever to the wallet. Anyway, what comes out from all this discussion, meaning we had two halachas by Rava. Rava talks about carrying a live baby with a wallet, a dead baby with a wallet. The Rava's discussion revolves around whether or not we could view the wallet as an ancillary portion of the baby or not. Rava's discussion is, even though the wallet is being carried indirectly, you're still going to be chayv on the carrying of the wallet. So all this now brings us full circle around to our Mishnah. Because even though Rava's talking about the Malacha Votzah, and our Mishnah is talking about the issue of Muktza, but however, what draws the two discussions together is that they are both discussing handling something indirectly, and they are both leading us to different conclusions. Our Mishnah says that when handling something indirectly, i.e., you're holding a child who's holding a stone, our Mishnah said that that's Mutter. And meanwhile, Rava says that when you're holding a child, a live child, with a wallet, so on the child you're going to be Putter for the Malacha Vatsa, but you are in fact considered as if you're carrying the wallet. So now we are at an impasse when you compare Rava's halacha and our Mishnah. And now the Gemara is going to make exactly that point. Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah. No tal adam is ben ovev and biyado. So the Gemara just simply quotes the Mishnah, and now we understand. How is Rava working in consonance with the Mishnah? So Amri debay Rav Yanai. So now Rav Yanai says is that what we're going to have to do is that we're going to have to take a new look at our Mishnah, and we're going to have to say something which is not simple pshat in our Mishnah, but we're going to have to say. The Gemara's assumption right now is that what Rav is saying is a tenet. It's a principle. And so therefore, when we go back to the Mishnah, even though usually we have an Amara conforming to the Mishnah, but over here what we're going to do is we're going to take a new understanding of our Mishnah, because Rav's position seems to be something which is not open for a debate. So, Amri Debei Rav Yanai B'Tinok Sheish Lo Gaguin Al Aviv. So, Amish is talking about a case where the child is basically having a tantrum. The expression in the Gemara is that he has this very strong attachment to his father, but basically the child is about to have a tantrum. And Rashi on the bottom writes, "V'tinek sheish lo gagun al aviv, she'im lo yitlenu yechale." If you don't pick up the child right now, he will get sick. "V'lo ha'emidu tiltul shelo biyadayim b'makom sakana." And so over here now, look, what is the issue that one is going to be violating by picking up the child? One's picking up the stone as well. And we are assuming, like Rava, that even though you're holding the stone, not directly but indirectly, but nevertheless, it is going to be a violation of Muktza. Okay, now with that in mind, So over here, can the Isra of Muksa be violated if it's to pacify your son? So the answer is yes. Now Rashi over here uses the word sakana, but even Rashi admits what kind of sakana we're talking about. We're not talking about a real critical sakana where the child's life is in jeopardy. If and that were in fact the case, everything would fall away. Muksa would go, and any other Isra Shabbos would go as well. We're not talking about an actual sakana, sakana's nefesh, and Rashi writes that. The afagav delav sakana's nefesh gemura, ala sakana's choli. It's just right now that the child is sick. Sick over here could be understood just simply as it's mental anguish. Mental anguish for not to be held right now by his father. And so therefore, even though the child is holding muksa, and even though by you picking up the child, the halacha recognizes that you are also picking up muksa, but for the pacification of the child, in order to calm the child down, so the isra of muksa will be allowed to be overridden. Okay, that is our new understanding of our Mishnah. And so with our new understanding of the Mishnah, what comes out now is that when you pick up the child with the stone in hand, you are picking up muksa. It just happens to be that our Mishnah now is presenting a specific scenario in which you're doing so for the purposes of pacifying the child. E hachi. As now we have a new understanding of our Mishnah, we now turn to the topic of Mem Beis Amud Aleph, and the Gemara says, if that's in fact so, my ear yavin afilu dinar nami. So the Gemara says, if that's true, so then why just talk about a stone? Talk about the wallet as well. Alam amar Rav lo shanu ala evan aval dinar asar. And meanwhile, Rav says that this allowance is only when it comes to a stone, but not with a wallet. But now, as we're learning the Mishnah, we're understanding that the whole reason why I'm able to pick up the child with the stone in hand is for purposes of pacification. So what difference would it make if the child is holding a stone versus a wallet? Now, in the Mishnah, we don't know there's such a distinction, but Rav clearly states that there's a distinction. Why would he make such a distinction? So the Gemara says, Evan inafal la lo asi abu lasuye. Dinar inafal asi abu lasuye. So the Gemara says, the difference between the wallet and the stone is not going to be because of the issues of muksa. Meaning, as far as muksa is concerned, muksa could be overridden, as we just explained. The problem with the wallet is that the wallet has value to the father. So in other words, if the father picks up the child with the stone and the stone falls out of his hands, okay, good, no problem. But if the father picks up the child and the wallet falls out of the child's hand, then the father is going to be tempted to pick up the wallet. The wallet obviously has value to the father. And so therefore, the father will be tempted to pick up the wallet. And that's why the Chachamim were concerned that with the case of the wallet, the father is going to then handle the wallet himself. Tanya Kavasi de Rava. Now the Gemara is going to be quoting a Braisa that supports Rava, that under normal circumstances, picking up a child with a stone is considered as if you're picking up the stone. The Mishnah says, Hamotzi kelim mekupalim u'menochem akteifa v'sandal v'tabasa v'yado chayav. If a person were to carry clothing, not wear clothing, but carry the clothing, so you're going to be chayav. And v'imayam luvash b'em pater. Now, if you're wearing the clothing, you're going to be pater. Right? A basic distinction between the allowance to wear clothing on Shabbos, which obviously is allowed, more than just allowed, obviously. But in other words, but that obviously is not considered masui, that's not considered a burden, as opposed to carrying the clothing being folded and you carrying it. And now it sets us up for the next point of the Braisa. Hamotzi adam v'kelev alav v'sandalav v'raglav v'tabasav v'yado pater. Now let's say you're carrying another person. And the person's wearing clothing, so then you're going to be pater. However, ilu hotzian kamo shehein chayav. But if that person were, let's say, carrying the clothing, and now you're picking up that person, so again, it's the same scenario in which you're carrying a person who in turn is carrying an item. It's as if you're carrying the item, so then you're going to be chayav. So this understanding that's now presented by Rava, where you pick up a person, that person's holding an item, you are in basically looked at as if you're also holding that item as well, and so therefore, if it would be a violation of the Malach of Atzah, you would be chayav. And the same thing is true regarding Muksa as well, meaning again, because remember, these discussions around Hotzah, our mission is around Muksa, but it's the same basic idea. If you're holding something which is a non-Muksa item, i.e. a child, but that child in turn is holding Muksa, so the Halacha views it as if you're holding the Muksa, and so therefore, under normal circumstances, you're not allowed to hold Muksa, you're not allowed to carry Muksa on Shabbos, but nevertheless, under limited circumstances, like Rav's explanation of our Mishnah, where the child is really having mental anguish, so under those circumstances, so the Isra of Muksa could be overridden. But under normal circumstances, you're basically carrying moksa, and therefore it's going to be problematic. Ad kan, that brings us now to the end of our first discussion of the Gemara, and really now what we have is a totally new understanding of our Mishnah, not the way the Mishnah was originally presented. And now we're going to do the same thing with the second case of the Mishnah. Kalkala v'evan besoch, we're talking now about a basket and a stone in the basket. And v'amayt ha'vi kalkala basas l'davra asur. So the Gemara here frames it a little bit differently. But the Gemara basically says, look, this basket now is holding the stone, so the stone obviously is a muk. So the stone was put into the basket before Shabbos, so that means now that this basket is the basis of, it's the base of a stone, it's a basas l'davra asur, which we already discussed earlier, is going to be a... It is going to be muksa. The basis itself now is going to be muksa. You shouldn't be able to move the basket. So Amar Rava Bar Bachana Amar Rav Yochanan Hachabe Kalkala Maleya Peres Askina. So the Gemara says that we're talking about a basket that was filled with fruit. Askina Leper Vinishya Lavin. So the Gemara says, okay, great. So now dump the fruit, dump the stone. Pick up the fruit again, and we don't have to worry now about the carrying of the stone. V'ninkinu biyadayim, so and pick up the fruit with your hands. So the Gemara says, "Kedrabi lai amirab beperes ha mitanfin." So hachanami beperes ha mitanfin. So the Gemara says, "Well, Rab's going to give an answer a little bit later on. We're going to borrow his answer, and that is that the fruit in question over here are really soft, really sticky. You pour them onto the floor; they're going to get dirty. No one's going to want to eat them. We don't have the option of just simply dumping the fruit on the floor." So the Gemara says, "V'linarina nu urei." Okay, fine, but shake the basket. Shake the basket to the point where the stone gets to the top and tilt the stone over and basically try to dump the basket of the stone. So Amrav Chia Barashi, Amrav Ahachab Kalkala, Pechusa Askinan, the Evan Gufa Nasas Dofin La Kalkala. So the Gemara says that we're talking over here about a very small basket. In fact, it was so small that the stone was basically embroidered into the wall of the basket. And so basically the stone serves as now just simply part and parcel of the basket. So again, now a totally new pshat in the Mishnah, in that now we have just explained that the Mishnah is describing a scenario in which the stone in question over here is actually part and parcel of the basket, and so as a result of that, you're allowed to move it because it is now just simply part of the makeup of the basket. Mitaltal and Truma. The Gemara is going to basically have the same discussion regarding the moving of the Truma as well. Amar Chista Lo Shanu, Ela Shetahara Lamata. Utameya Lamala. Rav Chista says that as far as the moving of the Truma, so we had a mixture of Truma Tameya and Truma Tahara, and the Mishnah says you're allowed to move it. And Rav Chista's limitation, that's only talking about where the Truma is on the bottom, the Truma Tahara is on the bottom, the Truma Tameya is on the top. Avatar Lamala, Tameya Lamata, Shakale Latara, Vishapak Lele Tameya. So the Gemara says, but if the Truma Tahara is on the top, and the Truma Tameya is on the bottom, so then the only thing you're allowed to do is just simply take off the Truma Tahara off the top of the basket. You can't pick up the whole basket. So the Gemara says, okay, but even when the Truma Tahara is on the bottom, why not just dump out the whole basket and just take out the Truma Tahara? Why are we insisting that you're allowed to be able to carry the Truma Tameya? So Amar Rabbi Lai, Amar Rabbi Peres HaMitanfim Askinan. Again, the Gemara over here says the same thing. We're talking about where the fruit is very soft, very delicate, very sticky. If I put it on the floor, it's gonna pick up the dirt, and no one's gonna want to eat it. Okay, so basically we made the same points regarding the Truma Tahara that we did regarding the stone in the basket. Meisvei the Gemara, however, quotes a brisa mitalton Truma Tameya ima Tahara v'ima chulin bein shetara lamala Tameya lamata bein shetameya lamala Tahara lamata. Now, despite the fact that Rav Chista made a distinction, and Rav Chista said that in the scenario where the Truma Tahara is on the top and the Truma Tameya is on the bottom, so then the halacha only allows you to take the Truma Tahara. That was Rav Chista's limitation of the Mishnah. And again, Mistaper certainly makes sense, because once I can access the Truma Tahara on the top of the basket, so then I don't have the right to simply move the whole basket. I understand Rav Chista, but in the meantime, however, the Gemara quotes a Braisa, and the Braisa says it doesn't make a difference which is on top, which is on bottom, whether the Truma Tameya is on the top or on the bottom, one is allowed to carry the whole basket. So to Yufta de Rav Chista. So that seems to be, this is a braisa. It's a clear refutation of the Shita Rav Chista. So Amlocha Rav Chista, Masisim L'Sorach Gufo, Braisa L'Sorach Mekomo. So Rav Chista says no. As far as making a distinction between the Mishnah and the braisa, the Mishnah is talking about a case of Sorach Gufo. The braisa is talking about a case of Sorach Mekomo. Meaning, the braisa is talking about a case where there is a basket on the table, and I need to move the basket. Meaning the basket right now needs to go somewhere else. That I need this place right now. This is an example of Sarach Makamo. So there, that's what the Braisa is saying. It doesn't matter which one's on top, which one's on the bottom. By virtue of the fact that there's both in the basket, and this basket is basically now a basis for both a Davar HaAser and a Davar HaMutar, so therefore one is allowed to move the basket. And because I'm Tzarech Mekomo, I need to move the whole basket. I just simply can't take out the fruit from the basket. The Mishnah's example is an example of Tzarech Gufo, where I actually need the fruit itself. So now we have to make a distinction. If the Truma Tahara is on the bottom and the Truma Tameya is on the top, so then, just so that I can move the Truma Tahara, I'm going to have to move the whole basket. But if the Truma Tahara was on the top and the Truma Tameya was on the bottom, so and it's only Tzarech Gufo, and the only reason why I want to move is because I want the Truma Tahara fruit, so now the Halacha only allows me to take the Truma Tahara, not the Truma Tameya. So my gducha de Rav Chista leuk me masin l'sorach gufo. Now the Gemara says, okay, I understand everything, but Rav Chista's setting up of the Mishnah almost seems unnecessary. Meaning, why couldn't Rav Chista just understand our Mishnah like the Braisa talking about a case of sorach makomo? I need to move the basket because I need the area, and so therefore there is an allowance that's given to move the entire basket regardless of the positioning of the truma tahara versus truma tameya. Why didn't he just simply say that's a simple pshat in the Mishnah? You could read the Mishnah that way. And Rav Chista was insistent, no, the Mishnah is talking about where it's Tzarech Gufo. I only needed to move the Truma Tahara, and therefore the Mishnah is only talking about a case where the Truma Tahara is on the bottom and the Truma Tameya is on the top. It's a valid pshat in the Mishnah, but is it a necessary pshat in the Mishnah? So Amar Rav Masis and Kavase Deka Diktani Seifa. Rav says, actually, yeah, it is a necessary way to explain the Mishnah. You read the Mishnah critically, and you read the next Mishnah here in our Perek, and you're going to see. In the next Mishnah, we're going to learn together. The Gemara now is going to quote it. Mao shalakar minar sakar vehenofos. If, let's say, I have money on the pillow, so what I'm allowed to do on Shabbos is tilt the pillow in order so that the money fall off. Tilt them on the side. The Amar Rabba Barbachanam Rav Yochan Loshanu Elot Tzarech Gufo. Yes, that's true. But that's only right now because I need the actual guf hadavar itself. But let's say I need that spot. Right now, I need to get to that spot. So, mitatalav odan alav. So now you can move the pillow. And again, we're going to ask the questions of buses as well later on. But in the meantime, however, you're allowed to move the pillow. But the Mishnah's example later on is that you're not allowed to move the pillow. You're just simply tilting the pillow. Oh, because that's a case of tzarech gufo. That's not a case of tzarech makomo. So the Gemara says, okay, so now that's what Rav Chista understood, that there has to be a certain consistency within the Mishnayos. If the next Mishnah is talking about Tzarech Gufo, our Mishnah is also talking about Tzarech Gufo. Umi Desefer L'Tzarech Gufo, Reishon Am L'Tzarech Gufo. That's why Rav Chista understood that our Mishnah is talking about Tzarech Gufo. Once Rav Chista's understanding is that our Mishnah is talking about Tzarech Gufo, so now you understand where Rav Chista now has to, in his mind, come up with a distinction, which is that when the Mishnah said that you have a basket of Truma Tahara and Truma Tameya mixed together, so you can pick up the whole basket. Oh, but this is Tzarech Gufo. Ah, so Rav Chista says, so there now has to be a distinction. The Mishnah's case is talking about where the Truma Tahara is on the bottom and the Truma Tameya is on the top. And that's why you have an allowance to move the whole basket. But Lu Yitzu had the Truma Tahara been on top and the Truma Tameya been on the bottom. And the only reason why I'm moving it is Tzarech Gufo because I want the Truma Tahara. So now you don't have a right to take the whole basket. Just simply take the Truma Tahara that's on the top. That's how Rav Chista understood the Mishnah, because our Mishnah is also in the same parak with the upcoming Mishnah of the pillow. The pillow case is Tzarech Gufo. Our Mishnah also is the case of Tzarech Gufo as well. Kuv Mem Beis Amud Aleph. We're now at the two dots, about two-thirds down on the Amud. And we're going to be moving now to the next discussion of the Mishnah, and that is going to be the case of the Truma. Let's quickly review the halachas as it relates to Truma. If I have a mixture of Truma and Chulin, we said this back in the Mishnah, but just quickly review. That was a short 28 minutes ago. So if I have a mixture of Truma and Chulin, and the mixture allows for Bittul, 100 parts Chulin to 1 part Truma, so now the halacha is that Bittul has occurred and a non-Kohen can go ahead and eat it. And it's not going to be. In other words, we know a non-Kohen eats Truma, that's Misa Bidei Shemayim. But nevertheless, over here, because there's Bittul, so there's an allowance for the non-Kohen to eat any part of this mixture. On the other hand, because we know that there was Truma in there, and we don't want to be Gozel Es HaShevet, we don't want to steal from the Kohanim, so the Halacha demands that one part Truma, even though of course we don't know where it is, and also Bittul has occurred, but still, one part of that mixture now is going to be taken off and given to the Kohen. And this is the halacha of ma'alim, of taking off one part. So the Mishnah said you could do that on Shabbos. Now, interesting, by the way, it really doesn't have much to do with the halachas of Muksa, seemingly, but still, it comes up in our Mishnah. And so the Gemara is going to ask a very simple question, and it'll take just a little bit of time to answer the question. So Rabbi Yehuda Amar Malin, one could do this process of Malin on Shabbos, v'amai haka misakein. And the Gemara says, I don't understand, because isn't this a tikkun? Because the only way that a non-Kohen can eat from this is first you have to take off that one portion, give it to the Kohen, and then only afterwards can somebody else come along, a non-Kohen, and eat the remainder, the 100 that's remaining. And isn't this going to be a violation of Shabbos? Because it is tikkun. So the Gemara says, the Gemara is going to propose a couple of suggestions, more than a couple. It's going to take us to get to the third round in order to arrive at a good explanation, one that the Gemara is happy with. So, Rabbi Yehuda, Kerebi Eliezer Sverle. Now, remember, in the Mishnah, this halach is presented b'shem Rabbi Yehuda. So, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda now is going to have to be subscribing to a particular position. What particular position? So, the Gemara goes on to explain it. So the Gemara says that maybe Rabbi Yehuda is subscribing to the Shita Rabbi Eliezer, the Amar Truma Be'ena Machta. So he says that as far as the Truma is concerned, we view the Truma as if it's still somewhat independent. Right? Be'ena Machta. Rashi writes over here, Karab Lazad Amar Truma, Ho V'nitna Lahalos Achas Sheyirtze Be'ena Machta Ki'ilu Munechus Levada. It's as if it's basically already put to the side. The enumu rebis, and it's not mixed in. Huchach lo kemetakim midi. So this is the way that conceptually Rabbi Eliezer views this one portion that you're going to get that you're going to take off. How do I know that? The Gemara now is going to be quoting a Mishnah in Trumos. The Mishnah did not. So Truma shenafel laperos mimea v'nidmeu. So you have a saw of Truma that gets mixed in with 100 of chulin, and now it becomes dimua v'nafel min hameduma lamakom acher. And now from this mixture, sorry. Let me reread the Mishnah and let's do it correctly. I have a saw truma shenafla lepachos mimea. Sorry, it fell into less than 100. So let's say our mixture over here is 1 and 99. 1 part truma, 99 chulin. And so now we don't have the bittel. And now we don't have this bittel. This mixture is referred to as dema, dalad mem ayin. And that means to say now that it is not mevutal. It's not been nullified. And so now this entire mixture is going to be usher to a non kohen. And now the Mishnah goes on to describe. Now from this mixture, v'nafal min hameduma lemakom acher. Now part of this mixture fell into another mixture. So Rabbi Lazar Omer, midamas kechuma vadai. So Rabbi Lazar is of the position that basically what we're going to do is that we're going to treat this demo like chuma vadai, which means to say that even though we know statistically the chances of, from the original mixture, it was chuma, was really small. Rabbi Lazar says, I don't care. Rabbi Lazar says that because we didn't have vittel, we're going to treat every portion of that mixture as if it's truma vadai, and so therefore, when part of this gets mixed in with a new mixture, we're going to be treating the portion that came in as vadai truma. That is Shitas Rabbi Eliezer. And the Chachamim say no. And what you're going to do is you're going to be doing a little bit of math. You're going to be figuring out what are the likelihood, what are the chances of this item coming from the original mixture being truma into the new mixture. You're going to basically be taking the sum total of the chulin that we're describing over here. And if there's bittel that occurs, so then we're going to say bittel. And if there's no bittel, so then it's going to be dema. But you're going to be working with the numbers that are presented in both mixtures. That's the sheet of the chachamim. Now, we are now focusing on the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. What is Rabbi Eliezer essentially saying? That when the portion comes off, we're treating it like truma vadai. So the Gemara says, so what we think right now is the same thing is true on Shabbos, meaning the portion that we take off as part of the process of ma'alin is going to be treated like truma vadai. And since it's going to be treated like truma vadai, so this is not really tikkun. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second, that is a real stretch. Aim at deshamaslei lechumra, lekula mishamaslei. Wait 1 second. Rabbi Eliezer in that Mishnah Trumos obviously was saying a position, but that only was to be machmir. The idea that a portion is coming off of this and we're treating like truma vadai, that's a chumra. And that means to say that when it goes into a new mixture, we're basically starting at ground zero, at level number one, where this is truma vadai that is going to now need 100 more pieces in order to be mevatalet. That's a chumra. Over here, to say that I'm now have a mixture where bittul has occurred, and the part that I take off is vaday truma, and therefore you're not being mesakin, that's a kula. The Gemara says, I don't think we can extend from the Mishnah and Trumas over to our halacha over here. Elohu da amar ka Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, okay, it's a great point, and we now have to try round number two. We're trying to explain why it is that doing this process of ma'alin is not going to be making a tikkun on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, okay, so maybe the Shita Rabbi Shimon Kedanan, and here a Mishnah. So Trumas Shnafla Lameya, you have a one saw of Truma that falls into 100. Velo hispik lagbia ad Shnafla acheres. So, you have here a case where you did have bittul, you had one part truma falling into 100, bittul has occurred, but then, before we went through the process of malin, what happened was, is that another sa of truma falls in. Now, how does the halacha view it? Machlokis tanayim. According to the Tanakhama, it's asur. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's going to be mutter. And so, what the Gemara right now is thinking is, what's the svara behind Rabbi Shimon? The svar behind Rabbi Shimon is that because when bittul has occurred, we can now take the one that we're going to take off, isolate it, because we're going to be basically treating it like the truma, and so therefore when another one comes in, so it's basically now coming into one, it's coming into 100 chulin. That's right now what we think the shita of Rabbi Shimon is. If this is the correct understanding of Rabbi Shimon, so now we understand that Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda, subscribing to the shita of Rabbi Shimon, and that when you're doing malin on Shabbos, all you're doing is taking off what is truma vaday. So the Gemara says, I don't know. Umi mai doma hasam behakem ifli the Tanakama savar afa gav de nafla bezachaze kaman de nafla bavas achaz dami vehalachem shenafla vehalachem shenafla. So the Gemara says you could offer a really simple explanation. The machlok is over there, and that is as follows: that even though the two saw came in not at the same time but sequentially, but maybe the way the Chachamim view it is that despite the fact that it fell in sequentially, halacha looks at it as if it fell in concurrently, and so therefore, how many saw fell into the 100? Not one saw, follow them by one saw, but rather two saw fell into the 100. Well, if two fell into the 100, you simply don't have the ratio. The ratio of bittul is 1 to 100. Now the ratio is 1 to 50, which is significantly far short of what is necessary for bittul. That's the sheet of the Chachamim. Rabbi Shimon Savar, Kamaisi Bata B'meya V'hati Bata B'meya V'chad. And Rabbi Shimon says, no. How do you view sequential? You don't view sequential as concurrent, but rather you view sequential as sequential. And that means that according to Rabbi Shimon, when one falls into the 100, you've created bittul. When the next one falls in, it falls into now 101. And now, obviously, you have the ratios for bittul. The first, you had a ratio of 1 to 100. The second, you had a ratio of 1 to 101. And that, obviously, in both circumstances, create bittul. It's like the idea of kama, kama, bittul. We discussed back in the Masechta Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says, so that is the way to explain it. And if that's the correct way to explain it, so then we have no proof for our discussion over here. So Ella, so now we are finally up to round number 3. Elohu damak Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar d'Tanya. So here now we have another shita regarding how to look at this mixture, and that is the shita Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar d'Tanya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer. No sein ein of bezev zev. I'm sorry. No sein ein of bitzad zev ochel mitzad acher. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon allows for the following: if in fact you have a scenario in which you had a mixture of 100 parts chulin to 1 part truma, and bittul has occurred, and yes, it is required to do this process of taking off one and giving it to the kohen, but even before you did that, what you're allowed to do according to the shita of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is basically in your mind, isolate one, which you know that's going to go to the kohen, and you're allowed to start eating the other portions which already are subject to bittul. Now, under this idea, what is clearly driving this idea is that the one part that you're going to give to the kohen, since you can isolate it, it's basically as if it's already been separated. And so as a result of that, when you actually do separate it, and here now we're talking about doing so on Shabbos, so you're not violating the Shabbos, it's not going to be tikkun, because the halacha already viewed it as if it already was isolated. This is the shita Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Yehuda now is subscribing to the shita. So the Gemara says, that's a nice idea, and it would work, but we have one small hurdle that we got to jump over. Umisav l'kavasei, as now that we turn to the top of the Amud Beis, the Hamifli Pali Gilavei, the Tani, the Gemara here says, yeah, but we do have the following Braisa. And the Braisa says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Malin Samaduma Becher Omer, Rabbi Shimon Melazar Omer, So here in the Braisa, it's presented as if they're debating, meaning Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar are actually debating this very point, where Rabbi Yehuda says you actually have to go through the process of taking off that one portion, and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says no, you could just simply look at one side and eat from the other side. So the Gemara says, aren't they at odds with one another? So it's really difficult to explain that Rabbi Yehuda is based on the sheet of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. The Gemara says, yeah, but here we're actually going to say that. The Rabbi Yehuda adifa mi the Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Yehuda is actually even stronger in his position on this topic than Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Meaning Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar allows you to go ahead and look at one side and start eating from the other side, meaning identify which part you're going to give to the Kohen, and then go ahead and eat from the remainder. And Rabbi Yehuda says, you know what? I love the idea so much, I'm going to even run with it. Meaning what I'm going to do with this idea is, this idea will allow me to even take it off on Shabbos. Because on Shabbos, obviously there's an issue of tikkun, but because I subscribe so strongly to this position, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, that the portion that I'm going to give to the Kohen, I can already isolate. So Rabbi Yehuda says, not only isolate it, I'm even going to take it off. Meaning because it's already been so identified as the portion that's going to go to the Kohen, so I'm going to take it off and this won't be a violation of tikkun. So the Gemara says, fine, so this in fact is now the explanation of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, or now we can even say it stronger. Rabbi Yehuda runs with the idea of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, and that's why in Shabbos, when you have this mixture, one part truma to 100 parts chulin, where you're not allowed to eat until you take off a portion to give to the Kohen, but one is allowed to do this because it already basically is identified as the portion that's going to go to the Kohen, as per the Shita of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Okay, Adkan. Takes us to the end of our first sugya of the morning. Takes us to the end of the first amud of today's daf. And let us start the second half of today's daf. We start with a Mishnah, Ha'evin Shapiach Chavis. So let's say you have a stone that is on top of a barrel. This Mishnah should sound familiar, as the Gemara earlier, back in the 17th parak, quoted this Mishnah, and now we get to see the Mishnah inside. I have a stone on top of a barrel. Barrel's got wine in it. And what I want to do is I want to get to the wine. So what do I do in terms of the stone that's on top of the barrel? Mate al tzida vihinofel. So what I'll do is I'll just simply tilt the barrel. So now the stone will just simply roll off the top of the barrel, and he no fellas, and the stone, of course, will fall off, and now you have perfect access to get to the wine that's in the barrel. Obviously, over here, the stone itself is muksa. We understand that's the theme of our perek over here. The stone itself is muksa. But nevertheless, one would be allowed to move it min hatzad. It's tilt min hatzad. It's indirect moving of the muksa, and therefore it would be permitted. The Gemara is going to ask the question of buses, so we're going to wait for the Gemara in order to discuss the issues of buses. Ha'isa ben achabios. Now, the Mishnah moves on to present the same case, but with a further complication, another challenge. And that is that there are plenty of barrels all around right now. And if I were just simply to tilt this barrel in order for the stone to roll onto another barrel, so then what's going to end up happening is that I'm going to break other barrels. So just simply tilting this barrel to the side is going to create destruction. And so what do I do over here? So the Mishnah says, Magbia umata al tzida vinofelos. So now what you have on Shabbos is an allowance to pick up the entire barrel, move it over somewhere else, then tilt it on its side so that the stone will fall off in another location. Mausha al kar menaras akar vehinoflos. If, let's say, you have money on a pillow, and I want to move the money, so what I could do with now is just simply tilt over the pillow, and the money will fall off to the side. Haisa alav lashlashes. If, let's say, the pillow had some dirt on it, mikancha bismartut, so you're allowed to wipe it with a rag. Rashi reminds us that the rag itself cannot be a wet rag if the rag was wet. So then this would be the malacha of libun. We're talking over here about a dry rag. Haisa sha'or nosen la'mayim ad shetechala. If, let's say, the pillow was made up of a hide, of a leather hide, so then you could run water on it because the hide is not subject to the malacha of libun. Only a garment is, but not a some sort of fabric garment, linen, wool, cotton, etc., etc. But leather is not going to be subject to the malacha of libun in running water on top of it. Let us begin the Gemara. Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav Lo Shanu Ela B'Shocheach Aval B'Miniach Nase Basel Sadavra Aser. The halacha of Rav Huna Amar Rav, which we discussed also back in the 17th parak, but now we get to discuss it again, and that's the halachas of Basis. If, let's say, a person were to position the stone on top of the barrel deliberately before Shabbos, meaning that's where he wanted the stone and he put it there, not b'shocheach, not forgetful, but simply because he wanted the stone over there, perhaps as a weight, whatever the case was, if it was intentionally, deliberately put on top of the barrel, so now the stone, obviously, which is a davar ha-muksa, the barrel, which is a basis, a davar ha-asur, and so therefore the barrel is going to be a muksa, it's a basis. And the only and our Mishnah's allowance to go ahead and tilt the barrel to the side in order so that the stone would roll off, that has to be talking about a case where it's not a basis. What's the case where it's not a basis? Where I forgot the stone on the barrel going into Shabbos. Meaning I did not put it in there on top of there intentionally. I just simply left it over there. I forgot it over there, but my full intention was to take it off and shocheach, and I forgot. Under those circumstances, the barrel is not going to be a basis. Haisa ben Nechavya is continuing now in the Gemara. Mantana de cholhecha de ika isur vehetera behetera tachina beisur lar tachina. So, this idea of our Mishnah, where let's consider, we have over here the following scenario. We have a barrel. The barrel, of course, is a davar hamutar. We have the stone, which is a davar ha'asar. And the Mishnah says that when handling, we certainly are given allowance to go ahead and to move the stone away. But the Mishnah says, don't handle the stone, handle the barrel. Rashi writes over here, Mantana de masisin de kani magbia, umata alzida de islay de chitarach mitrach bechavis. The full handling over here is only going to be of the barrel. Da'ave hetera. Now the barrel is a davar hetera. V'lo yitol ha'evan mamish. Da'ave yisura. And the Mishnah is, even though it would have been much easier to handle the stone as opposed to the barrel, just pick up the stone and move the stone away, the Mishnah is clear that the handling of the barrel should be done even though that's more exertion. The Af Agav, Rashi writes, Dehashta nami evim etaltav adichavis. And look, when all said and done, you understand that you're also moving the stone, albeit indirectly, but it is a tremendous amount of tircha to work with the barrel as opposed to just simply pick up the stone. And the Gemara wants to know, in Halacha, where do we find a precedence for this idea that we have to work around the Isser, work only with the heter, even though it comes out to being significantly more tircha? So Amar Rabba Bar Chanan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he did not. So the Gemara says it is the Shita of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Now, in order to appreciate the Shita of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, so we need a couple of introductory remarks. And when I say introductory, meaning, well, let's first learn the Mishnah in Beitza. Did not Abara Kidnis be Yom Tov? For the Mishnah here is talking about the act of Bara on Yom Tov. Now, on Yom Tov, we know that there is a Heter of Ochel Nefesh, which allows for certain malachas to be done. It is not carte blanche to allow every malacha to be done for food preparation. Certain malachas can be done vis-a-vis Yom Tov for the purposes of Ochel Nefesh. So, obviously, malachas like Havara, Bishol, Hotza'a, Lisha. So these are the obvious ones. Borer gets a little bit trickier. Borer is a little bit on the fence in terms of whether Ochel and Nefesh will allow for a heter or will not allow for a heter. In fact, when it comes to Borer, it's a machlokis tanayim. Beisham and Omer Borer Ochel the Ochel. So Beisham is of the position that just like you do Borer on Shabbos, like we learned back in the seventh parak of our Masechta, that's the way you're going to be doing Borer on Yantav as well. So Beisham is of the position that there is no difference between Borer on Shabbos, Borer on Yantav. You have to be navigated in the same manner. It is just as much a consideration on Yantav as it is on Shabbos. Shitas Beishamai. Ubeisila Omrim, Borer Kedarko, Becheko Vitamchui. And Beisila says, no, you want to do Borer on Yantav, you could do so in any manner that you want. You can do Borer in the normal manner, with your lap, with a plate. However, Borer is normally facilitated. Vitanya. Okay, so that's the starting point of the discussion. Obviously, we're working within the Shita of Beisila. And Beisila allows for Borer to be done on Yantav in, quote-unquote, a normal fashion. But on this, we have an addendum. Vitanya. Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel Bamed Var Mamorim Shaucha Maruba Ala Psalas. That's true. When you're doing Bora in the normal manner meaning you take out the impurities, that's only when there's more food than impurities. And that means to say that taking out the impurities would be easier. Ava psolos meruba ala ochel, but however, if we have more psolos than we have ochel, so that means to say now that we have a mixture, right? Our beans over here are mixed in with impurities. But the impurities are a lot. So now, the question of what should I be doing on Yantav? So, normal borer would be to take out the impurities. On the other hand, however, says Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, I have so many impurities over here that it's going to require extra effort. So divrei hakol borer ochel. So says Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, we have now a davar hamuskam. It is agreed to by both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel that what we're going to do is we're going to be spending more time taking out the good from the bad. And that is because if we are going to attack the impurities, it's just extra tircha. So, what we have over here is the idea of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, which is that if I have a choice, and that is that I could be Torech Beheter, or I could be Torech Beisser, and according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, if we have a scenario in which the Isser is extensive, excuse me, we have a scenario over here where the Isser is extensive, so then I should not be Torech Be'Isser, but rather I should be Torech Ve'Heter. And the Gemara says, okay, now if we could take that entire idea and translate it over here with the case of the stone and the barrel. So the Gemara says, now over here, is it not the case that we have more food than we have psolos? Meaning that over here we have a barrel of wine. On the other hand, we also have just a simple stone. And so therefore, if I'm asking what is going to be involved in terms of tircha, wouldn't it be much more tircha to handle the barrel than it is to handle the stone? And the Gemara is just basically wondering, if it's a function of tircha and not putting in as the not putting in excess effort, so it would seem to make more sense in our scenario over here, simply just move the stone away as opposed to handling the barrel. So the Gemara says, Hachanami came into Ibai Lemishka lo mishtakel leyain ad deshakalei. Kipsos Maruba ala ochel dami. The Gemara says, well, in our case, not necessarily, because consider that in our case over here, you want to get to the wine and you want to get to all of the wine. Meaning, it's not the pshat that you just simply want to get to the wine on the top of the barrel. You want to get to the wine on the bottom of the barrel as well. It will simply be impossible to get to the wine on the barrel on the bottom of the barrel until the stone is being removed. And so therefore, it's basically, halachically, we're going to view it as if the psolus is meruba ala ochel dami. Because you're just simply not able to access all the wine until the stone is removed. So halacha views it as the psolus being exceeding that of the ochel. And that's why what we're going to do is we're going to handle the barrel as opposed to handling of the stone. Okay, that's the Gemara's explanation in terms of even though we subscribe to Shitas Beis Hillel and even though we subscribe to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, in our case over here, we're going to be handling the barrel because we're viewing the barrel as if it is meruba, as if it is the one that is, there is simply more of. The continuing now in the Gemara, we're going to go just a little bit further this morning. Haisa bina chavios magbia tanya. The Gemara quotes a brisa. Rabbi Yossi Omer. Haisa achavos menuches ba'otzar. Let's say your barrel's in a storehouse, in a cellar. Osha haya kli zechuches menuchem tachteha. Or let's say you had delicate glass around, and if I were to just simply tilt the barrel, the stone's going to fall on the glass. So then, magbia lamakom acher, you simply pick up the barrel, move it to somewhere else, umate atzida, and then tilt it inside the hino fellows, but no tel himenu, mashitzarech lo umachzir lim koma. Okay, this brisa basically is exactly our Mishnah, formulated with a little bit more detail over here. I'm not sure what we gained in terms of learning the brisa over that which we already knew from the Mishnah. Let's continue in the Gemara. Mausha al hakar. If I have money on the pillow, Amar Rav Chiya bar Ashi, Amar Rav, lo shanu ela bishocheach, aval bemeniach nase basis ledavar aser. We're going to be making the same point with the money on the pillow as we made with the rock on the barrel. If I deliberately, intentionally put the money on top of the pillow, so this is now going to be considered halachically a basis. The pillow now is a basis for the money, and therefore you can't move the pillow. The pillow is muksa. The only case the Mishnah is dealing with is if I forgot the money on top of the pillow. Where now the pillow is not a basis of davar aser. Amar Rabbi Barachan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Loshenu El Tzorch Gufo, Aval Tzorch Mekomo, Metatel of Odan Alav. So, and now, a distinction between Tzorch Gufo and Tzorch Mekomo. The Mishnah is talking about a case where I'm only moving the money to the side because our Mishnah is talking about a case of Tzorch Gufo, where I actually need the pillow itself. However, if let's say I need the makom, in other words, I need the entire area, so then of course you move the entire, you move both pillow and money. If let's say it's not a case of tzorach gufo, but rather tzorach mekomo, I need the area, so then one is allowed to move on Shabbos, both pillow and money together, because now it is there is a need for that area, and so therefore I move both. This is a place in which we will stop, we'll pause, we'll pick it up tomorrow at the two dots. Let's quickly recap. We started the 21st parak of Masechet Shabbos this morning, and we dealt with two Mishnayos and two fundamental issues. Our first issue was whether or not a person is carrying, but indirectly in that, he's carrying a child who in turn is carrying a stone. Is that considered as if you are carrying the stone on Shabbos? Are you violating the Isser of Muksa? When we read the Mishnah, the answer seemed to have been no. But as we went through the Gemara, we went through Rava, the answer is yes. It is considered as if you're actually carrying the stone. And that would, of course, be Usser. You're not allowed to carry a stone on Shabbos. It's Muksa. So then how did you understand our Mishnah? Our Mishnah is talking about an extraordinarily limited scenario in which the child right now is suffering mental anguish. He's having a fit. And the halacha recognizes that there is a value in terms of trying to assuage the child. So picking up the child on Shabbos, even though the child is holding a stone, so one is allowed to do so in order to pacify the child. Ah, you're picking up Muksa? Yeah, but you're doing so indirectly, and at the same time, you're also trying to pacify your child. Under those circumstances, it would be mutter. However, the default position is that when you're picking up a child and the stone in his hand, that's tantamount to picking up the Muksa itself, and that would be, under normal circumstances, usur. And that brought us to, basically, the first discussion that we had. A basket with a stone. So the basket with a stone, a similar discussion. How could you pick up the basket with a stone in it? It is basically tantamount to picking up the stone. So the Gemara says that the Ukimta of the Mishnah is talking about where it was an extraordinarily small basket. And basically the stone was part and parcel of the basket. It ended up becoming part of the wall of the basket. Which we didn't ask the question. And I'll just ask it very quickly at the end during the summary. If that's true, then what's the Chiddush of the Mishnah? Obviously, it then would be it's converted to a non-Muksa item. Okay. Anyway, the Gemara's discussion regarding the Truma Tamei and Truma Tahara mixed together in the same basket. Rav Chista made a distinction in terms of it matters which one was on top. The Truma Tahara is on top, so then you just simply take out the Truma Tahara. If the Truma Tahara is on the bottom, then you can pick up the whole basket. Rav Chista made such a distinction, but meanwhile, the Braisa did not make a distinction. The Gemara says, yeah, the Braisa was talking about where it was, I needed to move it Tzorach Makomo. So therefore, there's no distinction to be made. I have to move the whole basket. Rav Chista was talking about Tzorach Gufo, and that's why there's a distinction to be made. Why was Rav Chista insistent that that's the way to understand the Mishnah? Because the next Mishnah is Tzorach Gufo, which we actually just covered. So therefore, the first Mishnah is also Tzorach Gufo, and that's why Rav Chista made such a distinction. Then, on the bottom of the Amud Aleph, we went through the discussion of this idea of Malin. When I have a mixture of Truma and Chulin, where Bittul occurred, it was 100 parts chulin, 1 part truma, still you can't eat that mixture until you take one portion of that and give it over to the Kohen. And you can do that even on Shabbos. Why isn't that tikkun? So the answer is because, according to the Shita Rav Shimon ben Elazar, I'm getting us to the end, according to the Shita Rav Shimon ben Elazar, that one part that you are going to be giving to the Kohen is already considered isolated and divided. No sein eino b'tzad zeh v'ochel b'tzad zeh. So it's already isolated, so therefore it's already considered as if it is separated, and so therefore you actually separating it is not going to be an act of tikkun. Then on the Amud Beis of today's daf, we went through similar discussions, but regarding a stone that's on top of a barrel, where I want to access the wine in the barrel, so what are you allowed to do? You're allowed to tilt the barrel in order for the stone to move, unless tilting the barrel and having the stone move is going to break other barrels or break other valuables over there, so then you could pick up the barrel, move it somewhere else, and tilt the stone to the side in order that it should fall off. Our discussions on the Amud Beis revolved around A, the issue of busis. Is in the barrel a busis l'davar ha'aser, and shouldn't the barrel itself be muksa? And the answer is yes, if you deliberately put the stone there before Shabbos. Our Mishnah is talking about a case of shocheach. Our second discussion was regarding the topic of tircha, meaning we are putting so much effort into the barrel, and meanwhile, all you could do is just simply pick up the stone, move the stone, and shouldn't tircha be consideration over here? And so our Mishnah is subscribing to the idea that if you could be torech beheter, you should be torech beheter. We have Rabbi Shimon Gamliel espousing such a viewpoint as well in the Mishnah in Beitza as an addendum to the Shita of Beis Hillel. Our Mishnah over here is also subscribing to the Shita of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that you should be torech beheter. In terms of how to view the relationship between the barrel and the stone, vis-a-vis which is considered more heter and more tircha. Okay, so that part was a little bit tricky, but the idea is that you should be torech beheter, and that's why so much attention should be given to the barrel as opposed to the stone. You should be moving the barrel, not the stone. And finally, our last discussion that we had was a discussion of moving the money off the pillow. Again, same buses discussion. And also on top of that, if you want the makom, meaning if the whole purpose of movement over here is tzarich makomo, so then obviously you're allowed to move the pillow and the money. The Mishnah scenario is where I only need tzarich gufo, not tzarich makomo. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end of where we got to. Tomorrow we pick it up at the two dots.